Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 9, 2015. A soldier in South Sudan's army shot and killed four civilians in Juba town.
He was targeting that lady and her mother. The lady was not in the house, but her sister unfortunately came to visit her mom, and he shot her dead, and he shot the mother. The mother is in the hospital, and then decided to shoot anybody nearby.
And the governors of South Sudan say they support President Kiir's order for creating 28 states.
We promised the president that we are going to ensure that there are going to be smooth transitions, handing over to the newly later appointed governors, and we'll make sure that, including the question of the assets, will be registered and will be distributed fairly.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Unidentified SPLA soldier killed four people, critically wounding two others, and turned the gun on himself in Juba's Gudele 1 residential area yesterday. SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says the soldier opened fire following a misunderstanding with a young woman in the neighborhood over a mobile phone. He says the soldier was a bodyguard to a SPLA general and was guarding a water pump where neighboring community uses to fetch clean water. Aguer says eyewitnesses told him that the soldier accused the young lady of stealing his mobile phone.
He was targeting that lady and her mother. The lady was not in the house, but her sister unfortunately came to visit her mom, and he shot her dead, and he shot the mother. The mother is in the hospital, and then decided to shoot anybody nearby. He went on the top of the building, and he was shooting on the street. He shot two people who were playing card at a distance of 400 meters, killed them, and he shot another lady who is suspected to be a foreigner. He was a shopkeeper, and he killed that lady, and then later on he shot himself.
Aguer says five people died in the incident. He says two others wounded are being treated at Juba Teaching Hospital. Aguer blames the incident on lack of counseling and treatment for soldiers traumatized by years of war.
We had members that are traumatized, war trauma, and that should have passed under some counseling and some health therapy that should have taken place. That has not happened. Since the end of the war in 2005, the SPLA forces have been engaged in operation, either at the border, trying to keep the borders with the north, fighting insurgency. And I believe as a nation, we need to do something, and treatment and counseling is needed.
Aguer says he fears similar acts of violence will continue to happen across the country unless the government provides counseling and other treatment programs to help soldiers deal with post-trauma stress and other effects of war. Waki Simon Wudu prepared that report from Juba. Governors of South Sudan's 10 states say they will implement President Salva Kiir's order creating 28 new states. President Kiir met with the state governors this week to brief them on the details of his order and how it should be implemented. The governor of Eastern Equatoria State says all of the governors have agreed to share resources with the newly created states. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Governor Louis Lobong Lojore says all 10 governors and the administrators of Abia and Greater Pibor areas attended Wednesday meeting at the State House in Juba with President Kiir and vowed to help carry out the president's order.
We, as the governors, we promised the president that we are going to ensure that there are going to be smooth transitions, handing over to the newly later appointed governors. And we'll make sure that, including the question of the assets, will be registered and will be distributed fairly to the new created states. And we will continue to support the president's implementation of the order.
Lobong says President Kiir and the governors also discussed how to implement the order.
We have also shared what next the process of factor for transitions of ending offer. We went further also sharing issues about the SPLM secretariats, how the SPLM can play a role now in the transitions.
Some communities within Western Equatoria, Eastern Equatoria and Upper Nile states have complained about the creation of the new states. Lobong did not elaborate on why some residents opposed the order, but said the governors urged President Kiir to address those complaints. Western Equatoria State Governor Patrick Raphael Zamoi says the people of Greater Tombora County oppose creating new states at this time.
The youth have submitted a report. The traditional leader of Greater Tombora submitted a report. The State Legislative Assembly submitted a report. The national, the member of National Legislative Assembly also submitted a report, of which I handed over to His Excellency, the President.
Zamoi says all the complaints raised by various South Sudanese communities will be presented to the president. Zamoi did not reveal the particular complaints being raised by citizens in his state. Reports on Radio Tamazos indicated that some residents are unhappy about the boundaries and the names of the new states. Other citizens complained that local leaders should have been consulted before the new states were created. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The leader of the SPLM in opposition, Riek Machar, says he is not opposed to the idea of increasing the number of states in South Sudan. He told us in an interview at the U.S. Institute of Peace yesterday that he just thinks President Kiir did not go about creating the new states in the right way. He says he himself even proposed expanding the number of states, but not the way Mr. Kiir is suggesting it should be done.
In principle, were for more states, because before him, we did declare 21 states based on the British districts, former colonial districts, with clear borders that are delineated and demarcated. What he has done is creating another conflict by creating new borders, and people will resist it, you know. They will resist it because they will say, where did you get all these borders? Cutting a chunk of land. Let me take an example, the Chuluk Kingdom. Chuluk are a kingdom within South Sudan. If you give them one state and you cut off part of their land, give it to another state which is not Chuluk, they definitely are going to resist it. And they did resist that before. They were the first to take up arms. Before the Murle took up arms, they were the first to take up arms just because they saw a slight alteration of their borders, some of their lands being incorporated into other states, like the Jonglei. So what brings conflict? We shouldn't do. The former colonial districts have clear, delineated, demarcated borders. They're 21. Let's use them. Later on, if some of the states found that they're too big to be one, then they can work out peacefully, identify the borders, and create more. When we were negotiating, when we raised the issue, tabled it, he didn't support it. And he gave a chance for the mediators to say, oh, this is triple.
Do you feel like he stole your idea?
You know, I like my ideas being stolen because this would be spreading the idea. This is a way of persuading people. I'm not envious about that.
Machar also told us about some of the personal and professional losses that he has suffered in life and why he thinks they were not in vain.
I'm lucky and I thank God for that. I obviously miss all those people that have been with me and those lost lives, starting from the day John Graham appointed me as a battalion commander, and then later on a brigade commander, and then division commander, and leading light forces. I have lost friends. I remember them very well, but I say they died in a good cause. The First War, for self-determination and independence. And what they died for, as they realized, our flag is flying. Yesterday when I visited the State Department, I stopped and said, where is South Sudan flag? I was shown it. I was happy. Now, with the tragedy, we are trying to transform the country to become a federal state, a democratic state, and hopefully, with development kicking off, people shall enjoy prosperity. And I have a dream that South Sudan one day would be an economic hub in Central Africa with the resources that we have. All this thanks to those who lost their lives in the process of creating this state.
That was the leader of the SPLM in opposition and former Vice President Riek Machar. He was speaking with my colleagues and me at the U.S. Institute of Peace in Washington, D.C. yesterday. Civil society activists, opposition politicians, and government officials disagreed on whether President Kiir's creation of 10 new states is a good idea. At a public discussion on the matter yesterday in Juba, the head of the Community Empowerment for Progress organization questioned the president's motives for creating 28 states, but a government official insists that South Sudanese people demanded more ethnically based states, and Mr. Kiir was simply responding to that demand. Philip Tonaleu has that story from Juba.
SEPO Executive Director Edmund Yakani says the government decision to create more states is a complete U-turn from its previous position. But he says at least it offers people a chance to debate federalism without being censored by the government. Still, he remains skeptical about the wisdom of creating 18 additional states and the way it was carried out.
Most of the celebrations on the streets are enforcing a culture of discrimination of some nationals whom others say are a burden to them. They say thank you. This is a reality. Some people are celebrating because they say this is the time we are liberated from the oppression of X and time has come for X to go.
Yakani says the creation of more states does not necessarily mean a federal system of governance. He says dividing the country into the 8 states along ethnic lines could trigger more conflict in the country, not less.
Ethnicity has become supper, and we are going to do the following. One, we are going to politicize this ethnicity. We are going to militarize this ethnicity, and we shall use this ethnicity as a measuring yard or stick of building a nation.
Yakani says a strong nation must remain cohesive and embrace its diversity. Luka Byong, the director of Juba University's Center for Peace and Development Studies, argues President Kiir's unilateral decision creating 28 states does not jeopardize the peace agreement signed by the president and rebel leader Riek Machar in August. Byong says, under the order, some counties will become states because of the ethnicity of those communities.
To see clearly why some counties, just a single county, becoming a state. And that's why, so it's raising a question, even if what type of federalism that we want. Because if we agreed it is ethnicity, let us be consistent in applying it.
Byong says the government must ensure that creating 28 new states does not violate the peace agreement. Many in the international community have criticized the move, saying it violates the spirit of the signed peace deal. Another panelist at yesterday's discussions, Lema Kol, who chairs the opposition SPLM DC party, says the order clearly violates the peace deal.
The peace agreement is our top priority.
The peace agreement is our top priority at the moment, and any event that wants to derail its implementation, including this order, should not be entertained.
Ambrose Ring, the former president of Southern Sudan Supreme Court, disagrees. He says the order is constitutional and says the opposition should reconsider their position. Government officials say the order will be presented to Parliament as an amendment bill in the coming weeks. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we'll hear what civil society groups have to say about President Kiir's order to create 28 states after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what advice would you give to a newly married couple?
I would advise them to respect each other's view, to listen to one another, and to be committed to each other.
If they want just to be as a good wife and husband at their homes, they should not listen to other advice from other people, because other people can intervene into their relationship. If they see that they are proceeding ahead in a good way.
First, they have to be too honest themselves. Secondly, they have to be faithful. Thirdly, they have to be transparent.
Sometimes the husband may have another idea which is contrary to the wife. So that means they have to sit down, see like the differences, and then try to bridge it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A consortium of South Sudanese civil society groups is asking President Salva Kiir to back off from his order to create more states in South Sudan. Ben Gideon, who spoke on behalf of the group, says the president should respect the constitution which he took oath to protect. Ben says Mr. Kiir's unilateral decision to create 28 states implies that the president is above the law.
Let me start focus on the unconstitutionality of the order. Article 86, subsection 3 of the Transitional Constitution of the Republic of South Sudan, amended 2015, merely limits the powers of the president with regard to issuing provisional orders. That article says the president shall not issue provisional order on anything affecting budget, bill of rights, allocation of resources, and issues of decentralized governance, including altering existing boundaries. That is, right together with the provision of Article 162, subsection 1, which compose South Sudan as a country of 10 states. However, it is only the Council of the State that have the legislative competence to alter the names of boundaries, change the names of the state capital, not even on their own motion, but upon the receipt of the letter from the concerned state. If the state A sent the letter to the council of the state that we want to change the name of our state from A to B, or change the capital from that to Y, then these were the council of the state in exclusive exercise of power vested upon them under Article 59, subsection G, can pass a resolution by a two-third majority of the council of the state.
The governors of the 10 states met President Kiir, and they came public saying they support the decision for the creation of the 28 states. What is the implication of the decisions of the governors now supporting this development?
Yes, of course, the decision is a political decision by the president, and the governors are subordinate officials of the executive. Therefore, you do not expect them to disagree with this political decision. They are left with no option or choice other than to buy this political decision and implement it accordingly. The question is the question of viability of the newly created state in terms of manpower, considering the current capacity deficit of the state structures. The second issue is the implementation of the agreement itself. The question is whether this thing is done in line with the agreement or not, are the issues that are going to face us as long time is going on for the implementation of this provision. And so we have no problem with the devolution of the state. Some of us indeed are for the devolution of the state, but it should be done in accordance with the constitution and the law.
What is the way forward for the civil society groups who have issued a statement saying the president should reconsider the order? What is the way forward if this goes through?
Our way forward is that we have called upon the president and remind him of his oath under Article 99 of the Constitution, because we believe South Sudan is governed on the principle of constitutionalism. In other words, the actions of the president or the government must be within the ambit of the Constitution and the law. And as a matter of fact, we call upon the president to do two things. One, to suspend the presidential order for the creation of the military state, and because it is unconstitutional and is a violation of the constitution, upon which he took oath of office and undertake to respect, obey, preserve, and protect the constitution. And therefore, it is very unfortunate for us to see the president violating the very constitution which he has undertaken to respect.
That was Ben Gideon speaking on behalf of a consortium of South Sudanese civil society groups in conversation with me earlier today from Juba. Riek Machar and senior delegates of the SPLM in opposition addressed a small group of South Sudanese diaspora in a town hall meeting last night just outside Washington, D.C. Among the opposition leaders in attendance was Angelina Teng, who is the wife of Machar, and the former South Sudanese Minister of Energy and Mining. SIN Bureau reports Teng is traveling with her husband and other SPLM leaders to garner international support for implementation of the peace deal.
Teny was one of a handful of SPLMIO leaders who came to meet with the South Sudanese diaspora here in the Washington, D.C. area. Teny describes the security situation in Juba as the single biggest hurdle all parties must tackle before peace can be attained. Her party has major concerns when it comes to the security arrangements in Juba, including the size of the forces and the dismissal of all Ugandan troops from the capital.
Once you address the issues of security, and especially the demilitarization of Juba, then you now have a first advanced team that would go to Juba. And if you had an advanced team that went to Juba, automatically, you know, people will begin to discuss and to move forth.
The opposition is not only demanding the withdrawal of Ugandan troops from Juba, it wants to limit the number of soldiers in Juba to 2,000 or 3,000. The government of South Sudan is demanding there be at least 5 times that amount stationed in the capital. Teny says establishing demilitarized zones and agreeing on the size of the security force is a large source of tension between the two sides.
But this big hurdle of the security arrangements, transitional security arrangements, especially in Juba, is an issue that needs to be addressed. You know, people are very apprehensive because of what happened in Juba. It's not about the opposition per se, but you have people who are in refugee camps, in UN camps, site. And you'd want to make sure and ensure that the protection is about the civil population. And this transitional period is a period where we want to prepare for a number of things.
Just yesterday, IGAD released a statement saying both sides have violated the agreement since it was signed by both leaders in August. Teny says she does not think President Kiir's insistence on repeatedly bringing up his reservations about the deal is helping matters in South Sudan.
Yes, this agreement was imposed. This agreement, you could not say that it was really a settlement that both parties were comfortable with. But that's how it is with peace agreements, because it's give and take. And since it has been signed, we should commit ourselves to it, committing ourselves to its implementation.
The group of SPLMIO leaders is expected to travel around the United States for another week in hopes of garnering more international support for implementation of the peace deal. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
From Washington, we move to northern Bahr al-Ghazal, where state officials say they are concerned about the welfare of hundreds of inmates in Awil Central Prison. Prisoners say it is very overcrowded, that they spend most of their time standing because there is no space to sit. State officials say they are working to either build more cells at the facility or relocate the prisoners altogether to a larger facility. Abraham Agot reports for VOA from Awil.
The harsh living conditions at Awil Central Prison became known to the outside world after Northern Bahr al-Ghazal State Acting Caretaker Governor Dengdeng Akwe visited the facility yesterday. Akwe says he wanted to tour the prison to verify reports of alleged human rights abuses at the facility.
We just came to visit Awil Central Prison. over congestion of the prison. That's overcrowdedness. When it was established, it was established for 150 prisoners. Now we have over 585 inmates.
585 inmates to be exact. Awul Central Prison was built in the 1970s when Northern Barakazar was part of Sudan's Wau district. It is located in the center of Awul town. There are two cells, one for males and one for female inmates. Most of the prisoners are accused of either theft, adultery, or failure to pay a dowry. Several say they have been kept at the prisons for months on end without being tried in court of law. They say if they had a chance to defend themselves, they believe they could either clear their names or be freed on bail. Inmates also complain that the prison's bathrooms are dirty, smelly, and too close to the cells. And some say the wardens repeatedly abuse inmates' rights. Bola Takbol is one of them.
In this prison, we have lots of problems. For instance, when one is arrested by police and brought to this prison and handed over to the wardens refuse to take us for treatment when we fall sick, claiming that it is the responsibility of the police who arrested us. We are not allowed to go for medication at all.
Ball also says some people accused of minor offense like stealing peanut butter are kept in prison for up to 6 months without being taken to court. So far, 154 of the inmates are on remand. They are yet to be tried in court. Acting caretaker governor Akwe agrees that conditions at the prisons are unfit for the human habitation.
This is something very dangerous because there are so many diseases have occurred here.
Akwe says state officials will work with the officials in the court system and traditional chiefs to come up with solutions for the reducing overcrowded condition at the prison. He says it comes down to either building more cells at the facility or relocating the entire prison to another county. He did not offer a timetable as to when one or the other would take place. A joint report by South Sudan National Prison Services and the United Nations Development Program on South Sudan prisons in 2013 concluded that inmates across the country lived in deplorable conditions. The report said there is a general lack of prison infrastructure in South Sudan and that most facilities were built by the colonial government back in the 1920s and 30s and are now dilapidated. For VOA News, I am Abraham Agoth reporting in Awil.
And that report by Abraham Agoth in Awil brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Koneta Nan Bura by Freedom Boys. We have been listening to Freedom Boys with the song Koneta Nan Bora, which means treat me well. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a restful weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.